Cloud Inspires. Tainoita ya ishmisia. Pilvenwood Duxen Dakana. Episode 12 with Marty Pavotival. And the topic, Managing Azure Enterprise Scale with Terraform. Hello and welcome to episode 12 of Cloud Inspires. This time we have a really special episode and first of all, hello. And as always on my side, Gregor.
Yeah, hi and welcome to our 12th episode. And yeah, really great to be here. And I have heard that some buddies are far, far away from his hometown.
Yes, some are on the other side of the country, so moved from west to east, but others have traveled from north to central Europe. But that will be, I think, a topic that we need to discuss in a few minutes. But before we kick off with our guest, there are some community news, and that Absolutely. Has something to do with the upcoming Cloud Identity Summit, right?
Yeah.
We have some announcements, I heard, about some stuff, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And we have made our planning meeting 2 weeks ago on Sunday. And now we have informed the speakers and they have confirmed his session. And we are really appreciate that we have two great workshop sessions. They are going 2 hours long. And which sessions are these are, Thomas?
Yeah, so drum rolls. We have some really special guests and I more than happy to welcome Stefan van der Wiele and also Dr. Azure AD Matthew to our conference. The guys will have a workshop, and I think it will be a really special event because in the morning we have some workshops with the both guys on site, and in the afternoon there will be some breakout sessions. And also, a special thing about the conference is the roundtable and the opportunity to have a discussion with the speakers and all other attendees. So, yeah, and I heard there will be some options to register next week. And take your eyes on Twitter and all the channels about further announcements.
Yeah, absolutely. So please follow our Identity Summit Twitter accounts. There we will be made all our announcements about the upcoming Cloud Identity Summit. And yeah, the registration opens next week.
Okay, cool. So now we switch over to our main topic for today. And I'm sitting here in a hotel room in a beautiful place called Säulenroda. And I have with me a colleague from Klückenkandia GAB. Welcome, Matti.
Hi, Thomas. Happy to be here with you today in the beautiful Säulenroda.
Yeah, so it is a really special time for us for the podcast because we have the opportunity to meet a guest in person. But before we switch over to our topic, please introduce yourself, Matti.
Yep. Hello. So my name is Matti Puoletalo, and like you said, I work at Klückenkandia GAB as a senior cloud consultant, and have been in the company since the beginning of 2020.
I have heard that you are working on the Microsoft Azure side, and this is a long topic or ongoing topic. When did you start with your work in Azure, and was your your background in this area?
Yeah, so if I briefly summarize my career, so I started in IT back in early 2000s. And my first IT gig was about repairing and building new computers for then eventually got into maintaining small business ITs, outsourced ITs. And through various steps, got into private cloud environments in the middle of 2010. Cloud was already becoming a thing back at that time. And I think I started my first tests on Azure around 2016. I got really impressed with the capabilities. And
is on the beginning of the Ibiza portal, I think, yes?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, so, well, actually, when I really started to look into it, the Azure Resource Manager was just coming out, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. So even though I've been into the old ASM environment, but actually most of the stuff I've ever done has been on the Resource Manager. So got interested and really got the first touch points to Azure in 2016. And then I decided to switch jobs to pure cloud provider. And I got into the job in the beginning of 2017. And that's been basically that was the kind of beginning of the ride for me in the Azure environment, and have been working there ever since.
Okay. And if you take a look back from the early years that you start studying and your first touches with Azure, do you see different trends or adoption rate between Finland and Germany? Because now you are also familiar with German customers. So do you see some differences in that because of data privacy concerns in the different countries or culture things or whatever?
Yeah, I think, initially, obviously, I was based in Finland when I got into the cloud or Azure work. And, obviously, working with the Finnish companies at that time, saw where the progress of the cloud adoption for the Finnish companies at the time, and what were the topics that they dealt with during the, let's say, 2017 to 2019. And then 2019, I actually started to work for the German subsidiary of my previous employer, and got into the German and Austrian customers. And that's kind of, allowed me to compare the different level or different states of adoption between the two countries. And I don't know, maybe it's the kind of a German reservations, which showed in the, or I'd say the German, typically the German customers were maybe 1, 2, maybe even 3 years on the adoption in comparison to the Finnish companies at that time.
Did you have also so many discussions about the data privacy and so on in your country during this time?
Yeah, it's been pretty much an ongoing topic at that time. So yeah, data residency and the privacy, mm-hmm. especially was a major topic or major discussion point with customers at that time.
Yeah. And when you take a look on the first years with Azure and how to implement that, how the adoption was also planned, because most companies are running a preparation phase and take concerns about the requirements before they start provisioning some resources. I hope that's the case for most companies. How is the difference between Azure adoption in 2016 and nowadays? Do you think there are more and more differences how the company starts, or are the most companies already adopted and have their foundation prepared to have the first cloud workloads?
Yeah, so especially in the beginning, because there was no, let's say, no enterprise scale architecture, even kind of a remotely to anything that resembles the kind of a current enterprise scale architecture. Pretty much for all companies, what they started dealing with was a blank slate with collection of services that they could identify that they'd need to set up in order to build the first foothold in the Azure. Whereas nowadays, you have the enterprise scale, the cloud adoption framework, which pretty much takes you from the hand, even from the first steps when you consider moving something into the cloud, and gives you a really kind of a nice detailed plan on how you should go there, what you should have in place before you actually log into the portal for the first time, and then what should happen after that. So for sure, it's quite a different world in 2022, and it's kind of funny to look back into the times that was how things were done when I started my work in the cloud, and how far it has gotten in such a short time. And then again, looking into the future, I see that that the speed is kind of ever increasing. Mm. So if you see how many new services are coming or being released day in, day out, one could wonder that it will be a really thrilling ride for the years to come, for sure.
Absolutely. And I heard some interesting word on your side. You mentioned the enterprise scale architecture, and I think this is really a great architecture that we have now on this time for many enterprises, also for all of the cloud customers. But can you describe how the more about the enterprise scale approach?
Yes, so loosely kind of, or if I give my own impression of it, so it's kind of Microsoft's view on how a typical customer should organize themselves in the cloud to be able to achieve the agility while still retaining the kind of a control or the security of the implementation. So how you should organize your resources in Azure, the policy considerations for building the guardrails for the adoption or implementations, how you define the access models for your internals as well as the externals, as external consultants or companies helping you, it's quite holistic setup, going even into the lowest levels of network design, how you should do the network layout, the topologies, the routing, the access controls, etc.
So would you like to say also that we like to avoid the wild, wild west scenarios that we had in the early days of cloud, where a developer gets their subscription and have their completely unrestricted environment, and there was no compliance, governance, or even security options that was defined to have the guardrails?
In a sense, yes. But then again, I think one of the benefits of the cloud is the possibility to experiment and be really agile, deploy stuff quickly, try out new things once I'm settling on the final architectures. And I think nowadays, or how I see it, is that the enterprise scale implementation should allow that to happen.
Yeah.
So the enterprise scale is in place to kind of provide a secure place with the guardrails built in to make sure that there's, let's say, or ensuring that the typical mistakes are bad configurations, like from the security point of view, will be taken care of by the policies automatically, so that the environment is kind of secure from the beginning for the developers or application teams to build their stuff on.
Do you see in your projects, because enterprise scale has this approach also with something called sandbox and also some staging environments within a tenant to allow a different level of security and compliance depending on if a workload is productive or is it more a playground for the developers? Is that something that most companies are implementing in one tenant? To have these different levels of security and compliance.
Yeah, that's sounds like a fairly typical setup. So for, let's say, testing the new features or potential POCs, you typically look to do them in the sandbox environment, which is or should not be connected to the rest of the architecture on a network level, etc. And once you actually initialize the project, start building the development UAT, QA production environments, those are then happening in a dedicated area of the landing zone, or the landing zones, which are then connected to the rest of the network for access to or for hybrid access, etc.
Absolutely. When you come to the enterprise scale and to the discussion with your customers, what did you think are the challenges in the now, how, and now also in the implementation for the customers? What is your discussion point here, and what is the questions from the customers, and what is your approach to get a good implementation and discussion with the customer on this side?
The good thing about the enterprise scale in general is that it's already battle tested, and it's proven to work. And obviously, for every customer, there's some leeway or some customizations or adaptations that you might need to think about implementing to suit their needs. But overall, adopting the standards, going the standard ways, is one way to guarantee the success in the future as well. Mm-hmm. So standardization nowadays is, I would say, a key, and any kind of a deviation from the standard, whatever it might be, in which part of the implementation, should be kind of really done in a really scrutinized way in order to identify, is that really necessary to do, given the limitations then in the maintainability and so forth in the future.
But it seems also to be a customer challenge to have this continuous improvement of an enterprise scale environment, right? Because Azure has this past changes, new features, and so on, and also best practice could be changed over the time, right? Mm. So what do you see as a good approach for a customer to say, how to continue the steps to be up to date, to have the latest improvements and features on it, because enterprise scale is not a one-time deployment, isn't it?
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, I think let's say one of the challenges thinking from the internal IT mindset is probably of letting go the past and adopting the new future with the or the new with the standard implementation. Having been worked in internal IT back in the days, just fairly common to tail or always do the unique implementation just for us. And now in the cloud era, getting rid of that mindset, adopting the standard implementation will probably be challenging at times, and requires kind of a mindset change also in the IT. The nice thing about the kind of a continuous improvement, adopting new services, is that if done properly, you have everything done in code, and should be kind of obviously for every change, especially in larger environments, those should be done really carefully. But after all, it doesn't mean purchasing a new co-location, purchasing the new network device infrastructure, setting up new servers. It can be all done in code. And that's kind of the beauty of the cloud.
And think you come to an interesting point, because about the mention about the deploying as code, and when we are on this side, so when you take a look on the enterprise scale architecture and when you will implement this, did you think it is possible to do this via the portal, or is always the approach to do this via infrastructure as code?
I think that should be the default approach. No consideration on doing anything from portal. Obviously, what the infrastructure as a code does is something that you could achieve by the portal as well, but would probably be quite labor intensive, as well as being able to do all that without any configuration errors, mistakes, as we humans tend to do those every now and then, would be quite a challenge. So seeing what you can do with the infrastructure as a code that's been quite an eye opener for me, and so kind of the efficiency, the speed, and especially the quality it ensures.
And I think most organizations are also interested in infrastructure as code, even if they have not the challenges about scaling a number of deployments because they have just a single environment, but have this visibility and also the opportunity to track the state of the environment. I think that is the important point, because if you're going to a portal, you're clicking all the stuff, and then you think that's the way how it is configured, but maybe someone has changed it after the time, and it will be more hard to track what changed. So what do you see as the most top three benefits of using infrastructure as code, especially when it comes to enterprise scale and shared resources in the Azure environment?
Top three benefits. Well, definitely.
That's decision, yeah.
Yeah. Which one of those big three? Well, first of all, I would say let's say efficiency, for example. You have this setup defined once, and you can deploy it as many times over, being guaranteed to have the exact same results over and over again. Then I would say the level of quality that you can achieve with it, especially if done right, following the GitOps practices, in a team setting, for example, you'll always have someone to verify the changes that you're proposing before they get implemented and so forth. That then boils into the quality that you can deliver. And lastly, which one to pick?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think those two would be kind of the highlights for me.
Mm-hmm.
That comes to mind.
And even it's also a kind, I wouldn't name it backup, but if there's some really worse things, it is also a way of saying, okay, I can come back to a point and compare. So it's also a kind of security stuff, right? So
absolutely. Having that within the state, having the kind of current representation of what you've deployed, being able to always get back to that is also kind of thinking about the continuity and disaster recovery, especially.
I like it also from the perspective of the documentation, and that you can work together with different members of a team together on one project, but you can see how are the project status is and what was the latest deployments and so on. It's really important topic to do this with to do infrastructure as code with the cloud and so on.
And I heard that is something we need to add. Mati is one of our Terraform wizard, I would say. So they are really deep in that. And Krieger, we are some old guys that every time likes to use Azure Resource Manager, because we started our journey with that, right?
So, absolutely, yeah.
I think we have the $100 questions that some people heard all over the time, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is really important question for me. So, and we have, there are some new functionality on the Azure ARM template side. So Matti, what did you think about the, did you always use Terraform, or did you sometimes go take a look at the ARM or with the Bicep world? Or is Terraform for you the best approach for the, for the cloud environment?
Well, first of all, thanks, Thomas, for the title. I'm not sure if I have the qualifications to earn that, but I'm really happy to have that. So I've been actually using Terraform myself only for maybe 2 years now. I tested it every now and then, but I'd say up to the mid 2020, up to that point, I typically used ARM templates and PowerShell only. But then I got introduced to the Terraform, and I was kind of mind blown with the capabilities that you can do with it. So having the syntax or kind of if you compare the JSON in the ARM templates with the HCL, it's quite a lot easier on the eye. And the possibility of using multiple providers to deploy into multiple different environments, especially from the services that we deliver for our customers on a kind of an ongoing basis, has been a kind of a really, really key to be able to do every bit of the configuration using the same syntax, the same infrastructure code templates. Whereas in the past, I'd say most of the deployments, especially bigger ones, it was some things done with ARM templates. Then you have some PowerShell in between to glue the ARM deployments together. And if I look into the old deployments, compare them to the new ones, they were quite a lot more prone to errors. Also, visualizing that the changes, for example, for pull request reviews was pretty much non-existent. So you need to kind of do the judgments based on the code level changes instead of seeing what would actually change in the live environment should this change be implemented.
Yeah, and I think this is, yeah, I fully understand this aside, and Terraform is, yeah, one of the, yeah, big part of the whole cloud environments and so on. What did you think is the strengthened about and the really important topic about to going with Terraform from your perspective?
I think it's, well, about thinking about the strengths. So first of all, like I mentioned, the syntax is pretty easy to grasp. There's tons of, let's say, how to get started articles available, which will guide you through the first steps. Then, like mentioned, the possibility of deploying into multiple environments. For example, we deal only with Azure in the current employer. But in Azure, you have the Azure Resource Manager, you have the Azure AD. And with the Azure Resource Manager templates, you can only do deployments to the Resource Manager. So if you need to do something, let's say you're delivering a new landing zone for an application team, you need to set up the groups, the service principals, assign them permissions into the subscription that you're about to hand out. You can do that with one set of templates. It's always a template. Then you have some scripts to create the stuff in Azure AD and so forth, whereas in Terraform, it's all part of the same configuration. And then if you add on top that, for example, automation to create DevOps projects for the team so that they can start building their CI/CD pipelines on that, that's yet another provider which you can automatically deploy into Why are the same set of templates.
And I think that is a really important point that you named here, because even for a guy like me that is living in the Asia and AJD world, which has to use Microsoft Graph for automation of AJD stuff, but we have also a Terraform provider for AJD to, for example, automate conditional access policies and so on. And the community and the HashiCorp products are very strong. Because there's not only, so there are also, we had this discussion yesterday during lunch break, there are also providers for Spotify, Tesla, and you can automate like everything with Terraform. And I think that's also great that you have the support from the community, and there's a lot of templates and stuff available.
Yeah, indeed.
Indeed. So Gregor, we have to learn Terraform, right? And I have to ask Matti if he will join us for an Azure Bon session to give us tips and tricks about Terraform. But what will be good resources for beginners like Gregor and me to start our Terraform journey?
That's a good question. So like I said, there's tons of how to get started. Content in the internet, but I actually typically recommend to go through the Terraform or HashiCorp's own documentation. They have really good introductions to the to HCL, for example, and how to get started with Azure. And once you kind of have the first configurations done, I typically next recommend having a look into the provider documentation itself.
Mm-hmm.
So for every provider, let's use Azure Arm as an example, has its own documentation in the Terraform registry, which is really nice set of documentation on how to get started from the authentication, how do you authenticate yourself to the environment, then having a look on how the different resources are declared, how they interact with each other, how you can reference other resources and so forth. That's typically what I would recommend to go through next. And then once you have the kind of a basics for basics covered, then having a look into the advanced features, how to make the core more dynamic and so forth would be kind of the next step then.
Yeah. And Gregor, what I already learned from Matti, because I'm at the moment only the guy that requests from some features in our Terraform implementation, for example, using workload identities and so on, it's also a good idea to have a look in the GitHub repositories of the providers to check out the issues, which could be an area that is not working for your requirements. So really great to have this transparency and also the discussions in the GitHub projects are really interesting to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, one of the highlights of Terraform is actually the community that's been built around it. So, and like you mentioned, the GitHub repositories, those are also really good sources for information.
This is also the place where I can find the enterprise scale reference architecture approach. So we know that when you take a look at the cloud adoption framework, you get a predefined ARM templates to deploy this. I think this is also in the Terraform Git repository to start directly the enterprise scale architecture in Azure and deploy this with Terraform.
Yep.
This is possible again, no? Yeah, okay.
Yes, I think there's two versions for the enterprise scale, one written in ARM templates and the other one for within Terraform, which is a really good starting point for setting up the enterprise architecture with infrastructure code.
And I think we have also to add to the show notes a video with Matti, who's talking about Azure Foundation, what you are working on. With Terraform, so interesting to see what you are doing in this spot. I think there was a Friday webcast where you presented latest updates and so on, right?
Yeah, I think there's actually a couple of those already where we go over the product that we've built.
Okay, so that we need to add to the show notes. And finally, we have some challenges at the end of our podcast, and I need to double check so that Matti is not seeing the questions and the answers. So no spoiler of the right answers for the questions. So Gregor, we have prepared a quiz, right?
Absolutely, and we have some interesting questions for you, Matti, and I think I will start with the first one.
Okay.
I'd say I think this is the easiest one. I think so. Maybe we take a look. What's the original
pressure? Yeah.
Yeah. What's the original project name of Microsoft Azure? It is Windows Cloud Services, Microsoft Online Business Services, or Project Red Dog.
Tough one. I don't actually know, but yeah. What was the middle one? Can you repeat that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was Windows Cloud Services, Microsoft Online Business Services, or Project Red Dog.
The middle one would sound like a typical Microsoft project. I would actually go for the Red Dog, just out of because it's so.
You changed your choice, so maybe there are some spoilers in your room.
No.
So what will you write question answer?
Yeah, the right answer is Project RedDog. Yes, and you
hey,
can
see hey. First point.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Great 100% so far.
Yeah. So yeah. So let's see how it ends. We have two additional questions. So coming to the next one, and I think that is also not easy to answer. Which Azure region does not exist?
Mm-hmm.
So here we are: Spain, Belgium, Poland, or Portugal?
As a region. Interesting.
So as a data center, Sarah.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So Spain.
I can't
remember. Belgium.
We can repeat.
Portugal. Yeah, we start with maybe from yeah. west to east. So we have Belgium, Portugal. And then, right order, Spain and Poland.
Okay.
Interesting hard. Order from west to east.
Yeah, I'm sorry for that.
Yeah.
Belgium. Yeah.
Well, typically use maybe a handful of regions, and there's been quite a lot of announcements in the recent years, and we are actually going to get a region in Finland as well.
Yeah, congratulations.
In the near future or in a few years, but I can't remember seeing Portugal. Maybe I'll go for that.
Gregor, I have to double check if there's some
unbelievable
answers. Yeah, congratulations. This is,
oh, yeah, this is also yeah. the right
you
answer.
Out of two.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Okay, so Gregor, last one. We need
yeah, to, I think we're to going to the last one.
A grand slam, winning all the 3 points.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, here we go. Who runs the largest data center in the US? It is Google, Apple, Microsoft, or the Deutsche Telekom, German Telekom.
Hmm. This is based
on who runs the largest data center in the US? It is Google, Apple, Microsoft, or the Deutsche Telekom.
I have to vote for or go with Microsoft.
It's Apple.
Oh,
so
okay.
They have only one look or some centralized locations, and they have one really big data centers. And it's really was also interesting for me. What is Apple? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, definitely interesting.
But it's always up to our audience, to our listener,
to double check
that, because the preparation for the quiz is or the validation is using Google from our side.
Okay.
So I could do also some wrong informations, but let's see. And I will start studying what are the right order for countries from West to East Europe. That will be my homework for the next time.
Yep.
So that was a good ride. So 2 of 3 right answers.
Really great.
Not bad.
I think we need to double check our high score list for podcast.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that could be the second or maybe also the first place. So let's see. Great. That was a great pleasure to have you here on the podcast, and also to meet you in person here in Sangoda. And next time, Gregor will join us so that we have a discussion with all three, and maybe you have the opportunity to come over to Bonn, and it will be our pleasure to have you in a meetup talk as well. Gregor, how's the weather in Cologne?
Oh, I'm not staying in Cologne. I'm staying in Frankfurt today.
Oh, okay.
But it's also good.
Okay,
and sunny.
Then you need to move the sun back to Sollenroda so that we have some lovely left days with having the opportunity to swim in the sea and so on. And that was our episode 12. Looking forward for the next time, right? And let's see who's our next guest.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are on some interesting planning.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot for having me. It was really a pleasure.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Matty, for joining us.
See you the next time.
See you.
See you. Thank you, Matty. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.